They maintain this gain for 3 months after the training session stopped. More recently, a research team made up of scientists from the University of Texas at San Antonio, the Cleveland Clinic, and the Kessler Foundation Research Center in West Orange, New Jersey, asked subjects to visualize contracting their elbow flexor muscles. As they did so, they were instructed to urge the muscles to flex as strong and hard as possible, adding a firm intention to their strong mental energy for 15-minute sessions, 5 days a week for 12 weeks. One group of subjects was instructed to use what is called external or third-person imagery, imagining themselves performing the exercise by observing themselves in a scene in their head separate from the experience, like watching a movie of themselves. A second group was instructed to use internal or first-person imagery, imagining that their bodies as they existed right then in real time were doing the exercise, making it more immediate and realistic. A third group, the control, did no practice. The group using external imagery, as well as the control group, showed no significant change, but the group using internal imagery showed a 10.8% increase in strength. Another team of researchers from Ohio University went so far as to wrap the wrists of 29 volunteers in surgical casts for 1 month, ensuring they wouldn't be able to move their wrists even unintentionally. Half the group practiced mental imagery exercises for 11 minutes a day, 5 days a week, imagining they were flexing their immobilized wrist muscles while actually remaining completely still. The other half, the control group, did nothing. At the end of the month, when all the casts came off, the muscles of the imagery group were twice as strong as those of the control group. Each of these three muscle studies show how mental rehearsal not only changes the brain, but can also change the body by thought alone. In other words, by practicing the behaviors in their mind and consciously reviewing the activity on a regular basis, the bodies of the subjects looked like they had been physically performing the activity, and yet they never did the exercises. Those who added the emotional component of doing the exercise as hard as possible to the intensity of the mental imagery made the experience even more real and the results more pronounced. In the piano playing study, the brains of the research subjects looked as though the experience they'd imagined had already happened because they had primed their brains for that future. In a similar way, the subjects in the muscle flexing studies changed their bodies to look as if they had previously experienced that reality, just by mentally rehearsing the activity through thought alone. You can see why, when you wake up in the morning and start thinking about the people you have to see, the places you have to go and the things you have to do in your busy schedule, that's mentally rehearsing. And then you add an intense emotion to it like suffering or unhappiness or frustration. Just like the elbow flexor volunteers who urged their muscles to flex without moving them at all. You are conditioning your brain and body to look like that future has already happened. Since experience enriches the brain and creates an emotion that signals the body, when you continuously create an inward experience that is as real as an outer experience, over time you're going to change your brain and body, just like any real experience would. In fact, when you wake up and start thinking about your day, neurologically, biologically, chemically, and even genetically, which I will explain in the next section, it looks as though that day has already happened for you. And in fact, it has. Once you actually start the day's activities, just as in the experiments above, your body is naturally and automatically going to behave equal to your conscious or unconscious intentions. If you've been doing the same things for years on end, those circuits, as well as the rest of your biology, are more readily and easily activated. That's because not only do you prime your biology every day with your mind, but you also recreate the same physical behaviors in order to reinforce those experiences further in your brain and body. And it actually becomes easier to go unconscious every day because you keep mentally and physically reinforcing the same habits over again, creating the habit of behaving by habit. Making genetic changes. We used to think that genes created disease and that we were at the mercy of our DNA. So if many people in someone's family died of heart disease, we assumed that their chances of also developing heart disease would be pretty high. But we now know through the science of epigenetics that it's not the gene that creates disease, but the environment that programs our genes to create disease. And not just the external environment outside our body, cigarette smoke or pesticides, for example, but also the internal environment within our body, the environment outside our cells. What do I mean by the environment within our body? As I said previously, emotions are chemical feedback, the end products of experiences we have in our external environment. So as we react to a situation in our external environment that produces an emotion, the resulting internal chemistry can signal our genes to either turn on, upregulating or producing an increased expression of the gene, or to turn off, downregulating or producing a decreased expression of the gene. The gene itself doesn't physically change. The expression of the gene changes, and that expression is what matters most because that is what affects our health and our lives. Thus, even though someone may have a genetic predisposition for a particular disease, for example, if their genes continue to express health instead of expressing that disease, they won't develop the condition and will remain healthy. Think of the body as a finely tuned instrument that produces proteins. Every one of our cells, except red blood cells, makes proteins, which are responsible for the body's physical structure and physiological function. For example, muscle cells make specific proteins known as actin and myosin, and skin cells make the proteins collagen and elastin. Immune cells make antibodies, thyroid cells make thyroxine, and bone marrow cells make hemoglobin. Some of our eye cells make keratin, while our pancreatic cells make enzymes like protease, lipase, and amylase. There isn't an organ or a system in the body that does not rely on or produce proteins. They are a vital part of our immune system, digestion, cellular repair, and bone and muscle structure. You name it, they're a part of it. In a very real way, then, the expression of proteins is the expression of life and is equal to the health of the body. In order for a cell to make a protein, a gene must be expressed. That's the job of the genes, to facilitate making proteins. When the signal from the environment outside of the cell reaches the cell membrane, the chemical is accepted by a receptor outside of the cell and makes its way to the DNA inside the cell. Then a gene makes a new protein that's equal to that signal. So if the information coming from outside of the cell does not change, the gene keeps making the same protein and the body stays the same. Over time, the gene will begin to downregulate. It will either shut off its healthy expression of proteins, or it will eventually wear out, like making a copy of a copy of a copy, causing the body to express a different quality of proteins. Different classifications of stimuli upregulate and downregulate genes. We activate experience-dependent genes, for example, by doing new things or learning new information. These genes are responsible for stem cells getting the instructions to differentiate, transforming into whatever type of cell the body needs at that particular time to replace cells that are damaged. We activate behavioral state-dependent genes when we are in high levels of stress or arousal, or in alternate states of awareness, like dreaming. You can think of these genes as the fulcrum of mind-body connection because they provide a link between our thoughts and our bodies, allowing us to influence our physical health through various behaviors, meditation, prayer, or social rituals, for example. When genes are altered in this way, sometimes within minutes, those altered genes can then be passed on to the next generation. So when you change your emotions, you can change the expression of your genes, turning some on and others off, because you are sending a new chemical signal to your DNA, which can then instruct your genes to make different proteins, upregulating or downregulating to make all kinds of new building blocks that can change the structure and function of your body. For example, if your immune system has been subject to living in the emotions of stress for too long, and has certain genes activated for inflammation and disease, you can turn on new genes for growth and repair and switch off the old genes responsible for disease. And at the same time, these epigenetically altered genes will begin to follow new instructions, making new proteins and programming the body for growth, repair, and healing. This is how you can successfully recondition your body to a new mind. So as you read earlier in this chapter, this means that if you're living by the same emotions day in and day out, your body believes it's in the same environmental conditions. Then those feelings influence you to make the same choices, causing you to demonstrate the same habits that then create the same experiences that then produce the same emotions all over again. Thanks to these automatic, programmed habits, your cells are constantly being exposed to the same chemical environment, outside your body and your environment as well as outside the cells, but within your body. That chemistry keeps signaling the same genes in the same way, and so you're stuck because when you stay the same, your genetic expression stays the same. And now you are headed for a genetic destiny because you don't have any new information coming from the environment. But what if the circumstances in your life change for the better? Shouldn't that also change the chemical environment surrounding your cells? Yes, that happens, but not all the time. If you've spent years conditioning your body to this cycle of thinking and feeling, and then feeling and thinking without realizing it, you've also conditioned your body to become addicted to these emotions. So simply changing the external environment by, say, getting a new job doesn't necessarily break the addiction any more than someone addicted to drugs would be able to stop their cravings just by winning a lottery or moving to Hawaii. Because of the thinking-feeling loop, sooner or later, after the novelty of the experience is over, most people return to their baseline emotional state, and the body believes it's in the same old experience that created the same old emotions. So if you were miserable in your old job, but managed to get a new one, you might be happy for a few weeks, or even a few months. But if you had spent years conditioning your body to be addicted to misery, you would eventually return to that old emotion because your body would crave its chemical fix. Your outer environment may have changed, but your body will always believe its internal chemistry more than its external conditions. So it remains emotionally locked into your old state of being, still addicted to those old emotions. That's just another way of saying you're still living in the past. And because the internal chemistry hasn't changed, you can't change the expression of your genes to make new proteins in order to improve the structure or the function of your body, so there's no change in your health or your life. That's why I say you have to think greater than the way you feel to make any real lasting changes. In the winter of 2016, at our advanced workshop in Tacoma, Washington, my team and I performed a study on the effect elevated emotions had on immune function, taking saliva samples from 117 test subjects at the start of the workshop, and then again 4 days later at the workshop's conclusion. We measured immunoglobulin A, IgA, a protein marker for the strength of the immune system. IgA is an incredibly powerful chemical, one of the primary proteins responsible for healthy immune function and the internal defense system. It's constantly fighting a barrage of bacteria, viruses, fungi, and other organisms that invade or are already living within the body's internal environment. It's so powerful that it's better than any flu shot or immune system booster you could possibly take. When it's activated, it's the primary internal defense system in the human body. When stress levels, and therefore the levels of stress hormones like cortisol, go up, this lowers levels of IgA, thereby compromising and down-regulating the immune system's expression of the gene that makes this protein. During our 4-day workshop, we asked our study participants to move into an elevated emotional state such as love, joy, inspiration, or gratitude for 9 to 10 minutes 3 times a day. If we could elevate our emotions, we wondered, could we boost our immune system? In other words, could our students upregulate the genes for IgA simply by changing their emotional states? The results amazed us. Average IgA levels shot up by 49.5%. The normal range for IgA is from 37 to 87 milligrams per deciliter, mg/dl. But some people measured more than 100 mg/dl at the end of the workshop. Our test subjects showed significant, measurable epigenetic changes without having any significant experiences in their external environment. By attaining states of elevated emotions even for just a few days, their bodies began to believe that they were in a new environment, so they were able to signal new genes and change their genetic expression, in this case, the protein expression of the immune system. See figure 2.4. This means that you might not need a pharmacy or an exogenous substance to heal you. You have the power from within to upregulate the genes that make IgA within a few days. Something as simple as moving into an elevated state of joy, love, inspiration, or gratitude for 5 to 10 minutes a day can produce significant epigenetic changes in your health and body. Where attention goes, energy flows. Since where you place your attention is where you place your energy, when you wake up in the morning and immediately start putting your attention and energy on all the people you have to see that day, the places you have to go, the objects you own and the things you have to do in the three-dimensional world, your energy becomes fractured. All of your creative energy is flowing away from you, as figure 2.5 illustrates, to all things in the outer world that compete for your attention, your cell phone, your laptop, your bank account, your house, your job, your co-workers, your spouse, your kids, your enemies, your pets, your medical conditions, and so on. Take a glance at figure 2.5. It is obvious that most people's attention and energy are directed to their outer material world. It begs the question, how much energy do you have left in your inner world of thoughts and feelings to create a new reality? Consider for a moment that each of these people or things you give so much attention to is a known in your life because you've experienced it. As I mentioned earlier in the chapter, you have a neurological network in your brain for each one of those things. Since they are mapped in your brain, you perceive and so experience them from your past. And the more you keep experiencing them, the more automatic and enriched the neural circuits for each of them become, because the redundancy of the various experiences keeps assembling and refining more and more circuits. That's what experience does. It enriches the brain. So you have a neurological network about your boss, a neurological network about money, a neurological network about your partner, a neurological network about your kids, a neurological network for your financial situation, a neurological network for your house, and neurological networks about all your physical world possessions because you've experienced all of those people or things at different times and places. When your attention and therefore your energy is divided between all these outer world objects, people, problems, and issues, there's no energy left for you to put on your inner world of thoughts and feelings. So there's no energy left for you to use to create something new. Why? Because how you think and how you feel literally creates your personal reality. Therefore, if you are thinking and feeling equal to everything that you know, that's the known, you keep reaffirming the same life. In fact, we could say that your personality is no longer creating your personal reality. Now your personal reality is creating your personality. Your external environment is controlling your thoughts and feelings. There's a biological match between your inner world of thoughts and feelings and your outer world, past present reality made of people and objects at certain times and places. You are continuously keeping your life the same because you are keeping your attention, thoughts, and your energy, feelings, the same. Finally, if how you think and how you feel broadcasts an electromagnetic signature that influences every area of your life, you are broadcasting the same electromagnetic energy and your life never changes. We could say that your energy is equal to everything in your past, present reality, and you are recreating the past. That's not the only limitation that occurs, though. When you place all your attention and energy on the outer world and you keep reacting to the same conditions in the same way, in a state of chronic stress which causes the brain to be in a constant state of arousal, your inner world becomes imbalanced and your brain begins to work inefficiently. And then you become less effective in creating anything at all. In other words, you become a victim of your life instead of the creator of your life. Living by the hormones of stress. Now let's take a closer look at how we end up getting addicted to our negative emotions, or more precisely, what we call the hormones of stress. The moment we react to any condition in our outer world that tends to be threatening, whether the threat is real or imagined, our body releases stress hormones in order to mobilize enormous amounts of energy in response to that threat. When this occurs, the body moves out of balance. That's exactly what stress is. This is a natural and healthy response because in antiquity, that chemical cocktail of adrenaline, cortisol, and similar hormones were released when we were facing some danger in the outer world. Maybe a predator was chasing us, for example, and we had to make a decision to fight, run, or hide. When we are in survival mode, we automatically become materialists, defining reality with our senses, by what we can see, hear, smell, feel, and taste. We also narrow our focus and put all of our attention on matter, on our bodies existing in a particular space and time. The hormones of stress cause us to give all of our attention to our outer world because that's where the danger lurks. Back in the days of early humans, of course, this response was a good thing. It was adaptive. It kept us alive. And once we had focused our attention on the cause, and then the danger had passed, the levels of all those stress hormones went back into balance. But in modern times, that's no longer the case. After just one phone call or email from our boss or a family member that elicits a strong emotional reaction such as anger, frustration, fear, anxiety, sadness, guilt, suffering, or shame, we turn on the primitive fight-or-flight nervous system, causing us to react as if we were being chased by a predator. The same chemistry automatically stays switched on because the external threat never seems to go away. The truth is that many of us spend the majority of our time in this state of heightened arousal. It's become chronic. It's as though the predator is not out there in the wild making an occasional toothy appearance, but is instead living in the same cave as we are. A toxic co-worker whose desk is right next to ours, for example. Such a chronic stress response is not adaptive. It's maladaptive. When we're living in survival mode and those hormones of stress like adrenaline and cortisol keep pumping through our body, we stay on high alert instead of returning to balance. As in Anna's experience in Chapter 1, when this imbalance is maintained long-term, chances are we are headed for disease. Because long-term stress downregulates the healthy expression of genes. In fact, our bodies become so conditioned to this rush of chemicals that they become addicted to them. Our bodies actually crave them. In this mode, our brains become overly alert and aroused as we try to predict, control, and force outcomes in an effort to increase our chances of survival. And the more we do this, the stronger the addiction becomes, and the more we believe we are our bodies connected to our identities and our environment living in a linear time. That's because that's where all of our attention is. When your brain is aroused and you are living in survival mode and you have to keep shifting your attention to your job, to the news, to your ex, to your friends, to your emails, to Facebook and to Twitter, you're activating each of these different neurological networks very quickly. Review figure 2.5. If you keep doing this over time, the act of habitually narrowing your focus and shifting your attention compartmentalizes your brain, and it no longer works in a balanced fashion. And when that happens, you are training your brain to fire in a disordered, incoherent pattern which causes it to work very inefficiently, Like a lightning storm in the clouds, different neural networks fire out of order so your brain works out of sync. The effect is similar to a group of drummers all banging on their skins at the same time, but not together or with any rhythm. We will talk much more about the concepts of coherence and incoherence in a later chapter. But for now, it's enough to know that when your brain gets incoherent, you get incoherent. When your brain isn't working optimally, you're not working optimally. For each outer world person or thing or place you've experienced in your life that is a known, you have an emotion connected to it because emotions, which are energy and emotion, are the chemical residue of experience. And if most of the time you're living by those addictive stress hormones, you might use your boss to reaffirm your addiction to judgment. You might use your co-workers to reaffirm your addiction to competition. You might use your friends to reaffirm your addiction to suffering. You might use your enemies to reaffirm your addiction to hatred. Your parents to reaffirm your addiction to guilt. Your Facebook feed to reaffirm your addiction to insecurity. The news to reaffirm your addiction to anger. Your ex to reaffirm your addiction to resentment, and your relationship with money to reaffirm your addiction to lack. This means your emotions, your energy, are commingled, even bonded with every person, place, or thing you experience in your known familiar reality. And that means there's no energy available for you to create a new job, a new relationship, a new financial situation, a new life, or even a newly healed body. Let me say it another way. If how you think and how you feel determines the frequency and information you are emitting in your energy field, which has a significant effect on your life, and if all of your attention, and so all of your energy, is tied up with your outer world of people, objects, things, places, and time, there's no energy left in your inner world of thoughts and feelings. Therefore, the stronger the emotion you are addicted to, the more you will place your attention on that person, object, place, or circumstance in your outer world, giving away most of your creative energy in causing you to feel and think equal to everything you know. It becomes difficult to think or feel in any new ways when you are addicted to your outer world. And it's possible that you can become addicted to all the people and things in your life that are causing you all the problems in the first place. That's how you give your power away and mismanage your energy. If you review figure 2.5, you'll find a few examples to illustrate how we create energetic bonds to all of the elements in our outer world. Take a look at figure 2.6. On the left side of the diagram, you see two atoms bound by an invisible field of energy. They're sharing information. It's energy that is bonding them together. On the right side of the diagram, you see two people who are sharing an experience of resentment and who are also bonded by an invisible field of energy that keeps them connected energetically. In truth, they are sharing the same energy, and so the same information. To separate the two atoms, it takes energy. By the same means, if your attention and energy are bound to the same people, places, and things in the outside physical world, you can understand that it's going to take energy and effort to break those bonds when you're in meditation. This begs the question, how much of your creative energy is tied up in guilt, hatred, resentment, lack, or fear? The truth is, you could be using all that energy to recreate a new destiny. To do that, you're going to have to get beyond all those things in your outer world by taking your attention off them. That's why we use meditation as the model to change our internal state. This allows us to break from our associations to every body, every one, every thing, everywhere, and every time, long enough to journey within. Once you overcome your emotional body and you take your attention off everything known to you in your outer world, you call your energy back to you, breaking the bonds with your past-present reality, which has been staying the same. You're going to have to make the transition from being somebody to being nobody, which means you have to take your attention off your body, your pain, and your hunger. You're going to have to go from being someone to being no one, taking your attention off your identity as a partner, parent, and employee. You'll have to go from keeping your attention on something to placing your attention on no thing. Forgetting all about your cell phone, your emails, and getting a cup of coffee. And from being somewhere to being nowhere, getting beyond any thoughts about the chair you're meditating in or where you'll be going later today. And from being in linear time to being in no time, with no distracting memories or thoughts about the future. I'm not saying that your cell phone or your laptop or your car or your bank account is bad, but when you're overly attached to those things and they've captured your attention to such a degree that you can't get beyond thinking about them because of the strong emotions you associate with them, those possessions own you. And then you can't create something new. The only way to do that is to learn to call all of that fractured energy back so you can overcome the emotions of survival that you have become addicted to and that keep all of your energy bound to your past-present reality. Once you take your attention off all those exterior elements, you start to weaken your energetic and emotional bonds with those things. And you finally begin to free up enough available energy to create a new future. That's going to require you to become aware of where you've been unconsciously placing your attention, and, like separating the two atoms, it's also going to take some energy to consciously break those bonds. People come up to me all the time in workshops and tell me their computer hard drive crashed, or someone stole their car, or they lost their job and they don't have any more money. When they tell me they have lost people or things in their life, you know what I always say to them? Great. Look how much available energy you now have to design a new destiny. By the way, if you do this work well and manage to call your energy back to you, it will most likely be uncomfortable at first, even a little chaotic. Get ready, because certain areas of your life may fall apart. But don't worry. That's supposed to happen because you're breaking the energetic bonds between yourself and your same past reality. Anything that is no longer in a vibrational match between you and your future is going to fall away. Let it. Don't try to put your old life back together because you're going to be way too busy with the new destiny you're calling to yourself. Here's a great example. A friend of mine who was vice president of a university showed up for a board meeting about 3 weeks after he started doing this meditation work. He was the backbone of that university. The students and faculty loved him. He walked into the board meeting and sat down, and they fired him. So he called me and he said, "Hey, I don't know if this meditation process is working. The board just fired me. Aren't great things supposed to happen to me when I'm doing the work?" "Listen," I told him, "don't you hold on to those emotions of survival, because then you'll be in your past. Instead, keep finding the present moment and creating from that place." Within 2 weeks, he fell in love with a woman he later married. He also soon received an offer for an even better job as vice president of a much larger and better university, which he gratefully accepted. A year later, he called me again to tell me that the college that fired him was now asking him to return as president. So, you never know what the universe has in store for you as your old reality falls away and your new one begins to unfold. The only thing I can assure you of is this: the unknown has never let me down. Calling your energy back. If you're going to disconnect from the outer world, you have to learn how to change your brainwaves. So let's talk about brainwave frequencies for a moment. Most of the time that you're awake and conscious, you are in the beta range of brainwave frequencies. Beta is measured in low range, medium range, and high range frequencies. Low range beta is a relaxed state when you don't perceive any threats from the outer world, but you are still aware of your body in space and time. This is the state you are in when you are reading, paying attention to your daughter during a friendly conversation, or listening to a lecture. Mid-range beta is slightly more aroused state, such as when you are in a group of people, introducing yourself to everyone for the first time and you have to remember everyone's name. You're more vigilant, but you're not overly stressed or completely out of balance. Think of mid-range beta as good stress. High-range beta is the state you're in when you're jacked up on the hormones of stress. There are the brain waves you display when you exhibit any of the survival emotions, including anger, alarm, agitation, suffering, grief, anxiety, frustration, or even depression. High-range beta can be more than 3 times higher than low-range beta and twice as high as mid-range beta. While you may spend most of your waking time in beta frequency brainwaves, you also dip into alpha frequency brainwaves throughout your day. You display alpha brainwaves when you are relaxed, calm, creative, and even intuitive, when you're no longer thinking or analyzing, and instead you're daydreaming or imagining, like a trance state. If beta brainwaves indicate where you are placing the majority of your attention on your outer world, alpha brainwaves indicate when you are placing more of your attention on your inner world. Theta frequency brainwaves take over in the twilight stage when your mind is still awake, but your body is drifting off to sleep. This frequency is also associated with deep states of meditation. Delta frequency brainwaves usually come during deep restorative sleep. However, over the last 4 years, my research team and I have recorded several students who can move into very deep delta brainwaves during meditation. Their bodies are deeply asleep, and they're not dreaming, but their brain scans show that their brains are processing very high amplitudes of energy. As a result, they report having profound mystical experiences of oneness, feeling connected to everyone and everything in the universe. See figure 2.7 to compare the different brainwave states. Gamma frequency brainwaves indicate what I call a superconscious state. This high frequency energy occurs when the brain gets aroused from an internal event. One of the most common examples is during meditation when your eyes are closed and you are going within, instead of an event that happens outside the body. We'll talk more about gamma brainwaves in later chapters. One of the biggest challenges people have when they meditate is switching out of high range and even mid-range beta and slipping into alpha and then theta brainwave frequencies. It's absolutely vital to do so, though, because when they slow down their brainwaves to these other frequencies, they are no longer paying attention to the outer world and all the distractions they're so used to thinking about when they're under stress. And since they're not analyzing and strategizing, trying to prepare for the worst-case scenario in their future based on their fearful memories of the past, they have the opportunity to become present, to exist only in the now. Wouldn't it be wonderful during a meditation to disconnect your association to all the elements in your outer environment, to get beyond your body, your fears, and your schedule, and forget about your familiar past and your predictable future? If you do it right, you will even lose track of time. As you overcome your automatic thinking, your emotions, and your habits in meditation, that is exactly what happens. You get beyond your body, your environment, and time. You weaken the energetic bonds with your past-present reality and find yourself in the present moment. Only in the present moment can you call your energy back to you. This does take some effort, although it will get easier with practice, because you're living by the hormones of stress most of the time. So let's look at what happens when you aren't in the present moment during meditation so you'll know how to handle that when it arises. Understanding this skill is important because if you can't get beyond your stresses, your problems, and your pain, you can't create a new future where those things don't exist. So let's say you're sitting in your meditation and you start to have some stray thoughts. You're in the habit of thinking that way because you've been thinking the same way and putting your attention on the same people and things at the same time and place for years now. And you have been automatically embracing the same familiar feelings on a daily basis just to reaffirm the same personality that's connected to your same personal reality, repeatedly conditioning your body into the past. The only difference now is that because you're trying to meditate, your eyes are shut. As you are sitting there with your eyes closed, you are not physically seeing your boss. But your body wants to feel that anger because every time you see her in your waking day, 50 times a day, 5 days a week, you are in the habit of feeling bitterness or aggression. Similarly, when you get emails from her, which happen at least 10 times a day, you unconsciously have the same emotional reaction to her So your body has grown accustomed to needing her to reaffirm your addiction to anger. It wants to feel the emotions it has become addicted to, and like an addict craving a drug, the body is craving the familiar chemicals. It wants to feel that familiar anger at your boss because you didn't get the promotion, or it wants to feel judgment about your coworker who always wants you to cover for him. Then you start thinking about other colleagues who annoy you and other reasons to be upset with your boss. You're sitting there trying to meditate, but your body is throwing the kitchen sink at you. That's because it wants its chemical fix or familiar emotions that you normally feel throughout the waking day with your eyes open. The instant you notice what's happening, that you are putting all of your attention on that emotion, you become aware that you're investing your energy into the past, because emotions are records of the past. So you stop and return to the present moment, and you begin to disinvest your attention and energy out of the past. And then, in a little while, you start to feel frustrated and angry and resentful again, and you realize what you are doing. You remember that your body is trying to feel those emotions in order to reaffirm its addiction to those chemicals. And you remember that those emotions drive your brain into high-range beta brainwaves. And you stop. Every time you pause, settle your body down, and return to the present moment, you are telling your body that it is no longer the mind. You are the mind. But then thoughts start drifting into your mind about the people you have to see and the places you have to go and the things you have to do later that day. You wonder if your boss has answered that email yet, and you remember that you haven't returned your sister's phone call either. And today is trash day, so you remind yourself you need to put out the trash. And all of a sudden you become aware that by anticipating those future scenarios, you are investing your attention and your energy into the same known reality. So you stop, return to the present moment, and once more disinvest your energy out of that predictable, known future and make room for the unknown in your life. Take a look at figure 2.8. It shows that once you find yourself in that sweet spot of the generous present moment, your energy, represented by the arrows, no longer goes away from you to the past and future the way it did back in figure 2.3. Now you are divesting your energy from that familiar past and predictable future. You are no longer firing and wiring the same circuits in the same way, and you are no longer regulating and signaling the same genes in the same way by feeling the same emotions. If you keep doing this process, you are continuously calling all that energy back to you by breaking the energetic bonds that keep you connected to your past-present reality. This happens because you are taking your attention and your energy off your outer world and placing it instead on your inner world, and you're building your own electromagnetic field surrounding your body. Now you have available energy that you can use to create something new. Not surprisingly, your attention eventually begins to wander again. As you continue to sit in meditation, your body becomes more annoyed and impatient because it wants to do something. After all, you've programmed it every day to get up and follow the same routine. It wants to quit meditating, open its eyes and see someone. It wants to hear something on TV or talk to someone on the phone. It prefers to taste breakfast instead of sitting there doing nothing. It would like to smell coffee brewing, like it does every morning, and it would love to feel something like a hot shower before it starts the day. The body wants to experience physical reality with its senses in order to embrace an emotion, but your goal is to create a reality from a world beyond your senses that's defined not by your body as the mind, but by you as the mind. So as you become aware of the program, you keep settling your body down into the present moment. The body tries again to return to the familiar past because it wants to engage in the predictable future, but you keep settling it back down. Each time you overcome those automatic habits, your will becomes greater than your program. Every time you keep settling your body back to the present moment, like training a dog to sit, you are reconditioning your body to a new mind. Each time you become aware of your program and you labor for the present moment, you are stating that your will is greater than your program. And if you keep returning your attention, and therefore your energy, back to the present moment, and you keep noticing when you are present and when you are not, sooner or later your body is going to surrender. It is this process of continuously returning to the present moment every time you become aware that you've lost it that begins to break the energetic bonds with your familiar known reality. And when you do return to the present moment, what you're actually doing is getting beyond your physical world identity and unfolding into the quantum field, a concept I will explain in detail in the next chapter. The hardest part of every war is the last battle. That means that when your body, as the mind, is raging, causing you to think that you cannot go any further, wanting you to stop and return to the world of the senses, you keep persevering. You truly step into the unknown, and sooner or later you will begin to break the emotional addiction within you. When you get beyond your guilt, your suffering, your fear, your frustration, your resentment, or your unworthiness, you are freeing your body from the chains of those habits and emotions that keep you anchored in the past. And as a result, you are liberating energy that is now coming back to you. As the body releases all of this stored emotional energy, it is no longer becoming the mind. You discover that right on the other side of your fear is courage. Right on the other side of your lack is wholeness. And just beyond your doubt is knowing. When you step into the unknown and surrender your anger or hatred, you discover love and compassion. It's the same energy. It has just been stored in the body, and now it's available for you to use to design a new destiny. So when you learn to overcome yourself, or the memory of yourself and your life, you break the bonds you have with everything, every person, every place and every time that's keeping you connected to your past-present reality. And when you finally overcome your anger or your frustration, and you liberate energy that was trapped in the past, you call that energy back to you. As you liberate all of that creative energy that has been tied up in those survival emotions, within you and all around you, you are building your own personal energy field around your body. In our advanced workshops, we've actually measured this effect on calling the energy back. We have experts who use very sensitive equipment called a gas discharge visualization, GDV, machine, with a specially designed sensor called a Sputnik antenna, developed by Konstantin Korotkov, PhD. It measures the ambient electromagnetic field in the workshop conference spaces to see how the energy changes as the workshop progresses. On the first full day of some of our advanced workshops, we sometimes see the energy in the room drop. That happens because once we start meditating and those students have to overcome themselves by breaking the energetic bonds with everyone and everything in their known reality, they are calling energy back to themselves. They're drawing energy from the greater field, and the field in the room can diminish as the participants begin to build their individual field of energy around their own bodies. And now they have available energy to use to design a new destiny. Of course, as our entire group gets beyond themselves the first day, they finally build their own light field, and as their energy keeps expanding each day, they begin to contribute to the energy in the room. As a result, we finally witness the energy of the room rise. To see what this sometimes looks like, find graphics 1A and 1B in the color insert. One way to increase your chances of a successful meditation is to give yourself enough time so you don't get distracted by trying to rush through the experience. When I meditate, for example, I allow for 2 hours. I don't have to take 2 hours every time, but I know myself well enough by now to realize that if I have only 1 hour, I'm going to tell myself there's not enough time. If I have 2 hours, on the other hand, I can relax, knowing I have plenty of time to find the present moment. Some days I find the sweet spot of the present moment pretty quickly, while on other days I have to work for an hour at bringing my brain and body back into the present. I'm a very busy person. Some days when I have just arrived home for 3 days between workshops or events, I wake up in the morning and immediately think of the 3 meetings I have planned that day with different staff members, mentally rehearsing what I have to talk about. Then I think about the emails I have to get done before I go to those meetings. Then I think about the flight I have to catch that afternoon. Then I make a mental note about the phone calls I have to make on the drive to the airport. You get the idea. As that happens and I'm thinking about the same people I have to see, the same places I have to go, the same things I have to do, all at the same time in my known familiar reality, I realize that I am priming my brain and body to look like that future has already happened. I become conscious that my attention is in the known future, and I stop anticipating the known and turn back to the present moment. As I do that, I'm beginning to unfire and unwire those neural connections. Then I might get a little emotional and become impatient and a little frustrated thinking about something that happened yesterday. And since emotions are a record of the past and where I place my attention is where I place my energy, I become aware that I'm investing my energy in the past. Then the hormones of stress may get my brain aroused and my body gets a bit fired up into high-range beta brainwaves, and I have to settle it back down into the present moment again. And as I do that, I'm no longer firing and wiring the same circuits in my brain, and I'm disinvesting my energy out of the past. And if I'm aware of the same thoughts that are connected to those same familiar feelings, when I stop myself from feeling the same way, I'm no longer conditioning my body into the past, and I'm no longer signaling the same genes in the same ways. And if the emotions are the end products of experiences in the environment, and if it's the environment that signals the gene, then when I stop feeling those same emotions, I'm no longer selecting and instructing the same genes in the same ways. That not only affects the health of my body, but also no longer primes my body to be in the same future based on living in the past. So as I inhibit those familiar feelings, I'm changing the genetic program of my body. And since the hormones of long-term stress downregulate the expression of healthy genes and create disease, every time I am able to stop when I catch myself feeling any of those emotions that are related to stress, I am no longer conditioning my body to stay addicted to the emotions of stress. If I do it properly, overcoming my familiar thoughts and emotions of my known past and future, then energetically, neurologically, biologically, chemically, hormonally, and genetically, that predictable future, as well as the familiar past I used to affirm it, no longer exists. If I am no longer firing and no longer wiring those same old neural networks, by no longer thinking about those memories of the people or things at certain times and places, and I keep returning to the present moment, I am calling energy back to me. Take a look at figure 2.9 and you can see how the familiar past and the predictable future no longer exist. Now I'm in the sweet spot of the generous present moment, and I have available energy to create. I've built my own energy field surrounding my body. Every time I've labored, sometimes for hours, to get beyond myself and find that place called the eternal now, and I truly break through, I've always thought the same thing. That was so worth it. Chapter 3. Tuning into new potentials in the quantum. Getting beyond our body, our environment, and time isn't easy. But it's worth it because once we disconnect from three-dimensional reality, we enter a whole other reality called the quantum, the realm of infinite possibility. Describing this reality is a bit challenging because it's unlike anything we are familiar with in the physical universe. The rules of Newtonian physics, the way we are used to thinking the world works, simply don't apply. The quantum, or unified field, is an invisible field of energy and information, or you could say a field of intelligence or consciousness, that exists beyond space and time. Nothing physical or material exists there. It's beyond anything you can perceive with your senses. This unified field of energy and information is what governs all the laws of nature. Scientists have been working to quantify this process so we can more fully understand it, and they are discovering more and more all the time. Based on my knowledge and experience, I believe there's a self-organizing intelligence that is energy, and it is observing all of the universes and galaxies into order. Sometimes people will say to me that this idea seems a bit unscientific. I always answer them with the same question. What happens after an explosion? Order or disorder? Their answer is always that disorder results, Then I ask, so why, after the Big Bang, which was the biggest explosion ever, has so much order been created? Some intelligence must be organizing its energy and matter into form and unifying all the forces of nature to create such a masterpiece. That intelligence, that energy, is the quantum or unified field. To give you some idea of what this field is like, imagine taking away all the people and bodies on Earth, all the animals and plants and physical objects, both natural and man-made, all the continents, the oceans, and even the Earth itself. Imagine you could then take away all the planets and moons and stars in our solar system, including our sun. And then imagine taking away all the other solar systems in our galaxy, and then all the galaxies in the universe. There's no air, and there isn't even any light that you can see with your eyes. There's just absolute blackness, the void, the zero-point field. It's important to remember this because when you as a consciousness in the present moment unfold into the unified field, you will be in an infinite black space, void of anything physical. Now imagine that not only do you not see anything here, but because you enter into this realm without a physical body, you also have no sight with which to see, nor do you have the capacity to hear, feel, smell, or taste. You have no senses here at all. The only way you can exist in this quantum is as an awareness. Or better said, the only way you can experience this realm is with your awareness, not your senses. And since consciousness is awareness, and awareness is paying attention and noticing, once you are beyond the world of the senses, when you pay attention to the energy of the quantum field, your consciousness is connecting to greater levels of frequency and information. Yet as strange as this may sound, the quantum field is not empty. It's an infinite field filled with frequency or energy. And all frequency carries information. So think of the quantum field as being filled with infinite amounts of energy vibrating beyond the physical world of matter and beyond our senses. Invisible waves of energy available for us to use in creation. What exactly can we create with all this energy swimming in an infinite sea of potentials? That's up to us because, in short, the quantum field is the state in which all possibilities exist. And as I just said, when we find ourselves in the quantum universe, we exist simply as an awareness or as a consciousness, specifically an awareness that is paying attention to or observing a field of infinite possibilities existing within an even greater consciousness and a greater level of energy. As you enter this endless, vast space as an awareness, there are no bodies, no people, no objects, no places, and no time. Instead, infinite unknown possibilities exist as energy. So if you find yourself thinking about knowns in your life, you are back in the three-dimensional reality of space and time. But if you can stay in the blackness of the unknown for long enough, it will prepare you to create unknowns in your life. In the previous chapter, when I was instructing you to return to the present moment, I was referring to you stopping yourself from thinking about the predictable future or from remembering the familiar past and simply unfolding into this eternal, vast space as an awareness, to no longer place your attention on anything or any one material in this three-dimensional reality, like your body, the people in your life, the things you own, the places you go, and time itself. If you do that properly, you are nothing but awareness. That's how you get there. Now let's back up a bit and look at how scientists came to discover the quantum universe, which happened when they began studying the subatomic world. They found that atoms, the building blocks of everything in the physical universe, are made up of a nucleus surrounded by a large field containing one or more electrons. This field is so large in comparison with the tiny electrons that appear to be 99.999999999999% empty space. But as you just read, the space isn't actually empty. It's made up of a vast array of energetic frequencies that make up an invisible, interconnected field of information. So everything in our known universe, although it may appear to be solid, is actually 99.999999999999% energy or information. In fact, most of the universe is made up of this empty space. Matter is an infinitesimally small component in relation to the immense space of nothing physical. Researchers soon discovered that the electrons that move around in that vast field behave in a completely unpredictable manner. They don't appear to be subject to the same laws that govern matter in our larger universe. They're here in one moment, and then gone the next, and it's impossible to predict where and when the electrons will appear. That's because, as the researchers eventually discovered, the electrons exist simultaneously in an infinite number of possibilities or probabilities. It is only when an observer focuses his or her attention and looks for something material that the invisible field of energy and information collapses into a particle we know as the electron. That is called collapsing the wave function, or a quantum event. But as soon as the observer looks away, no longer observing the electron and taking his or her mind off the subatomic matter, it disappears back into energy. In other words, that particle of physical matter, the electron, can't exist until we observe it, give it our attention. And the moment we're no longer putting our attention on it, it turns back into energy, specifically an energetic frequency which scientists call a wave, and into possibility. In this way, mind and matter are related in the quantum. By the way, just as we as subjective consciousness are observing the electron into form, there's an objective universal consciousness that is constantly observing all of us and our three-dimensional reality into order and form as well. So what that means for you is this. If you're viewing your life from the same level of mind every single day, anticipating a future based on your past, you are collapsing infinite fields of energy into the same patterns of information called your life. For example, if you wake up and you think, "Where's my pain?" Your familiar pain soon appears because you expected it to be there. Imagine what would happen instead if you were able to take your attention off the physical world and the environment. As you learned in the last chapter, when you take your attention off your body, you become no body, and you no longer have access to, or any use for, the senses. When you take your attention off the people in your life, you become no one, and so you no longer have an identity as a parent, a partner, a sibling, a friend, or even as a member of a profession, a religious group, a political party, or a nationality. You have no race, no gender, no sexual orientation, and no age. When you take your attention off objects and places in the physical environment, you are in no thing and nowhere. Finally, if you take your attention off linear time, which has a past and a future, you are in no time. You are in the present moment in which all possibilities in the quantum field exist. Because you are no longer identifying with or connected to the physical world, you are no longer trying to affect matter with matter. You are beyond matter and beyond how you identify yourself as a body in space and time. In a very real sense, you are in the immense blackness of the unified field where nothing material exists. That's the direct effect of continuously laboring to get to the present moment that I described in the previous chapter. The moment that happens, you unfold your attention and energy into an unknown field beyond matter where all possibilities exist. A field made up of nothing but invisible frequencies carrying information or consciousness. And just like the quantum scientists who took their attention off the electron, only to find that it reverted to energy and possibility, if you were to take your attention off your life, or get beyond the memory of your life should turn into possibility. After all, if you focus on the known, you get the known. If you focus on the unknown, you create a possibility. The longer you can linger in that field of infinite possibilities as an awareness, aware that you are aware in this endless black space, without putting your attention on your body, on things, or on people, places, and time, the longer you invest your energy into the unknown, the more you are going to create a new experience or new possibilities in your life. It's the law. Brain changes. When you walk through the door to the quantum field, you can't enter as a somebody. You have to enter as a nobody, as only an awareness or a consciousness, a thought or a possibility, leaving behind everything else in the physical world and living only in the present moment. And as I said in the previous chapter, this process requires that you break your chemical addiction, at least temporarily, to the same emotions that used to drive your thoughts, and you stop feeling the same way so you can stop putting your attention on the three-dimensional world of matter, the particle, and instead put your attention on energy or possibility, the wave. Given all of that, you probably won't be surprised to learn that such an experience creates some pretty significant changes in your brain. First, because you are perceiving yourself as being beyond the physical world, which means there's no outside danger to anticipate, your thinking brain, the neocortex, the seat of your conscious mind, slows down, becomes less aroused, and works in a more holistic fashion. Earlier, we talked about how living by the hormones of stress causes our brain waves to fire in a very disordered, incoherent pattern, which in turn means our bodies can't work efficiently, because we are trying to control and predict everything in our lives. We become excessively focused, shifting our attention from one person to another thing, to some place at a certain time, activating the various neurological networks assigned to each one of these knowns. Once we slip into the present moment and become aware of this infinite field of information where there is nothing physical, this eternal void, and once we are no longer analyzing or thinking about any body, any one, any thing, any place, or any time, we are no longer activating those different compartments of neural networks in our brain. And as we move our awareness from a narrow focus on matter, objects, people, places, our bodies, and time, in our external environment, and instead open our focus and become aware of the vastness of this infinite blackness by putting our attention on nothing, on space and energy and information, our brain begins to change. The different compartments that were once subdivided now start to unify and move toward a coherent whole brain state. Different neural communities reach out and form bigger communities. They synchronize, organize, and integrate. And what sinks in the brain begins to link in the brain. Once your brain gets coherent, you get coherent. When it gets orderly, you get orderly. When it works well, you work well. In short, when it functions more holistically, you feel more whole. In other words, once you start connecting to the unified field as an awareness, or once you become more aware of it by paying attention to it, your biology becomes more whole and unified, since the unified field is, by definition, a unifying energy. To more clearly see the difference between coherence and incoherence, take a look at graphic 2 in the color insert, as well as figure 3.1. As you can see, when brain waves are coherent, they are in phase with one another. Both their crests, their high points, and their troughs, their low points, match. Because coherent brain waves are more orderly, they are also more powerful. You could say they speak the same language, follow the same rhythm, dance to the same beat, and share the same frequency, so they find it easier to communicate. They're literally on the same wavelength. When brain waves are incoherent, on the other hand, the electrochemical messages or signals they are sending to different parts of the brain and body are mixed and erratic, so the body cannot then operate in a balanced, optimal state. The second change our brains experience when we enter the quantum is that our